Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the gentle, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for they will be called the children of God. And blessed are the peacemakers, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Excuse me for mixing the order on the last two. That is how Jesus began, and he didn't get it mixed up. That is how Jesus began his great Sermon on the Mount. And as we have been working our way through these Beatitudes, these pronouncements of blessing in the last number of weeks, and as different members of the preaching team have been participating, we have seen how Jesus presents a message that is amazing, amazing to our ears. I'm not going to introduce the Sermon on the Mount this morning. I'm not going to introduce the Beatitudes as a whole this morning. We have already done that several times. But my job is to concentrate on blessed are the pure in heart. But let me make three observations, if I may, about the Beatitudes just by way of introduction. Jesus has been called the new Moses. Moses delivered the commandments on the mountain, and Jesus delivered the Sermon on the Mount. The Beatitudes have, in fact, been compared to the commandments, or at least made analogous to the commandments in the Old Testament. And I think there's something rather significant in that. But let me suggest to you that the Beatitudes probably correspond more closely to some things in the Psalms or Proverbs. The Psalms begin, blessed is the one who does not walk in the way of the ungodly. And it begins with that kind of blessing. That's the first observation I want to make, just for your thought. The second observation I would make is this, that Jesus, when he pronounced on virtues, pronounced on very different virtues than were honored by the Romans of his day. Philosophers have divided the virtues into what are called masculine and feminine virtues. The masculine virtues were promoted by the Romans: duty, honor, and strength, things like that. Jesus, on the other hand, promotes the feminine virtues like mercy, peacemaking, and gentleness. The third observation I would make is that to slide down the calendar 2,000 years, there came 20 or 25 or perhaps 30 years ago the promotion of self-development. And everyone from Andrew Weil and Anthony Robbins to Deepak Chopra and Phil McGraw promoted this self-development or meeting your potential and all that kind of thing. Jesus' teaching is not about promoting the self, but others. It's not about promoting the self, but God. And so what I'm trying to say in all of these is that Jesus' teaching contrasts sharply with everything else. The virtues that he promotes are virtues that are radically different from most of what others present, at least. All right? Now, the Beatitudes are obviously important, and it seems to me that if I turn now to focus on the pure in heart, the Beatitudes are obviously important, and this one seems to me obviously important, but obviously impossible. You agree? So what I want to try and do this morning is I want to spend most of our time perhaps concentrating on the first part of that beatitude, blessed are the pure in heart, and then I'll take a few minutes at the end and talk about the promise attached to it, or at least the other half of it. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Seeing God is a little bit above my pay scale, but I'll spend just a few minutes on that at the end. All right. So let's talk about the blessed are the pure in heart. What I would like to do, first of all, I want to try and set it in three settings. And the first is in the context of Jesus' own ministry. And it is in these words, with these words that we begin. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees. Right? You have the context? Jesus, it's in a chapter that talks about these Pharisee people. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to be people as righteous, but on the inside, you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. When Jesus came, he took two distinctly different approaches to people. The people in general he saw as sheep without a shepherd, and he approached them with kindness and compassion. When he went to the scribes and Pharisees, he saw them as the dysfunctional shepherds, and he approached them with anger and sadness. And this is how he characterizes them. He says, you're like whitewashed tombs that are prettied up on the outside, but inside are just full of dead men's bones. You are hypocrites. And there was nothing, I think, that touched that chord in Jesus' heart so forcefully as hypocrisy. Purity of heart is integrity, as opposed to hypocrisy. That's the first thing I'd like to say about purity of heart. That purity of heart is, first of all, integrity, as opposed to hypocrisy. That when Jesus spoke to these people, he was speaking to hypocrites, and he spoke forcefully to them. Question. We clean up pretty well on Sunday, right? I mean, we don't look like bad people. And I don't have any clue that anybody in this building is a bad person. But I wonder if we have the same. Do we have on our, figuratively speaking, do we wear our Sunday clothes on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday? Do we present the same character? Do we present the same, not like whitewashed tombs on the outside, but what about our heart? Is our heart clean on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday? I think that if there is a danger in attending church, it is the danger of looking good on Sunday and not being so hot on Monday. I've talked to a number of people who have, in this culture, we live in a church culture. People in this church culture who say, oh yeah, he looks good on Sunday, but you ought to see him on Monday. He's not the same guy. Are we Sunday pure on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday? Now, I say that. Now, let me say something a little more specific. There is a greater danger for those of us who stand up here, or those of us who sit or stand before classes in there and teach the Word of God. There is a greater danger for us, as there was for the scribes and Pharisees. The danger of teaching and preaching these things and not living them. Do we live them? Do we live them? Let me go to another context. And this context is in the Old Testament, and it goes like this. Who may ascend to the mountain of the Lord? Who may stand in his holy place? The one who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not trust in an idol or swear by a false god. The contrast here is not between integrity and hypocrisy. The contrast here is between honoring God and bowing before idols. The context here is not of somebody who is sinlessly worthy to come into the temple and worship. And the principle here is that purity of heart is single-minded devotion to the Lord. The psalmist here is not talking about coming before God and standing and saying, Lord, I thank you that I am not like this other. The principle here is coming before God and being wholly devoted to him and not turning in any way to an idol. Purity of heart has to do with being wholly devoted to the Lord. When someone says, and they mean it with all their hearts, when someone says, I love you with all my heart, that's purity of heart. There's a New Testament verse that's equivalent to that in the spiritual realm, and it goes like this. Young man comes to Jesus, and he says, Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus replied, Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. That's the first and greatest commandment. That's purity of heart. Purity of heart is absolute, utter, unqualified, unmixed devotion to the Lord. Do we cultivate purity of heart in that way? What do I do? Now, I've got the three fingers pointing back this way. What do I do to cultivate my relationship with the Lord? What do I do to bow before him each day and say, Lord, I am yours, and I want to honor you, and I want to serve you, and I want to live for you. Where am I in that? I don't want to say too much about that because it hurts me. We could isolate ourselves and go into cloisters, you know. We could all say, oh, I'm going to sell everything, sell our house. We'll all move in together to a compound, and we'll build a 12-foot wall around the compound, and we'll be holy to the Lord. That's not what God calls us to do. He calls us to live on Seafarer Lane or Gilbert Street or Harrison Road. He calls us to live there and be devoted to the Lord. He calls us to live in the middle of culture and be devoted to the Lord. He calls us to live next door to our neighbors and be devoted to the Lord. To be wholly devoted to him. We could preach that everybody here must pray five times a day. That's not what God requires. He just requires that we be wholly devoted to him. We need to live in this world, in this community, in this culture. Thank you, Paul. We need to live in this situation with judgment, devotion, and discipline, so that as we are living in this community, in this culture, we are living in such a way that people see something about us, that we are wholly devoted to the Lord. I think of Joseph. I think of Joseph. He's one of my heroes. He was sold into some slave traders by his brothers, and he was carried down into Egypt. And I don't think the kid had a clue what was going on. And he was sold to these slave traders and taken down into Egypt and sold to this bigwig who ran Potiphar, who ran the the affairs of the Pharaoh. And then he was propositioned by this guy's wife. And when he didn't give in, he was framed and thrown in prison. What did Joseph think? What could he do? He was wholly devoted to the Lord. And he never once compromised. That's amazing. That's amazing. He was pure of heart. He was pure of heart. The third place that I would like you to go is also in the Old Testament. And it comes from a very particular context. It comes from the context, in contrast to Joseph, we have David, who did compromise, who compromised badly, who compromised in adultery, who compromised in having the woman's husband killed so that he wouldn't figure things out. I mean, he blew it. And he came back to God when he was confronted with it. He came back to God and he wrote these amazing psalms out of the depth of his own forgiven guilt. And we have these words in Psalm 51. Create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Create in me a pure heart. I think one of the things he's saying here is God's the one who can create a pure heart. God's the one who can give us a pure heart. Can I say God's the only one who can give us a pure heart? But he says, renew a steadfast spirit within me.